Stop. We're done with Border Boss.
Good. Great.
We're done. I don't know what else we could do because we both had and executed on Beef or Fever. this is what I set out to do. I would not have done it if you had not spurred me toward it. So thank you. But we did it. We both made a dream come true. We had a beefer.
Yep.
Taco Bell beefer. It's been gone for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that.
At least. Probably been like 40 years or something, but
50. It's been gone for 70 years.
Yeah,
taco guts on a burger bun. realized we did it.
Yeah,
I don't think. I hope it becomes a challenge, like you said. I hope it becomes, people dancing outside of their moving cars while eating a sloppy, loose assortment of meats dripping down their arm off of a bun. But if they don't, I know we did it, and no one else is doing it. How did it go for you?
Okay, so if you guys don't know already, I do an Instagram called Retro Food Ghoul, and on the last episode of Border Boss, I said how I was going to soon be doing a Taco Bell seafood salad on my Instagram, Retro Food Ghoul, and the beefer, but I kind of jokingly said the beefer part. I didn't think I would actually do it, and then I did the seafood salad, and it was whatever. If you want to hear a long story, basically, I spent about 6 hours just looking at the Taco Bell app, wondering how I could, because I wasn't going to order it on the app, so I was just, wondering what would be the quickest, not stupidest way to say I just wanted, lettuce and tomato in the taco shell. And luckily, as fate would have it, I get there, and I order the salad, and I tell her, I'm like, it's going to be weird. And she's, looking at the screen, she's never heard anybody say salad at Taco Bell. Yeah. And she's like, after a while, she's like, I don't think we sell that anymore. And I was like, okay. I was like, you happen to just, because, it's on the app. So it means I could have just ordered it on the app. And then we don't
sell the item with the 38,000% markup because it's just a bowl of lettuce.
That was the other reason I was worried, because it is a $6 item at Taco Bell, making it the most expensive thing by whole dollars, basically. And so, she was like, I don't think we sell that anymore. And I was like, okay, do you just happen to have the shell? That's all I really want the most. And she's like, yeah. She's like, I'll just give it to you. And I was just like, okay. I was like, yeah. Is there any chance you could just put lettuce, tomato, and cheese in there? And she was like, yeah, fine. And so she gave it to me just how I wanted. I didn't even have to pay the $6 for it. And
you got a free salad. I didn't catch that bit.
Yeah. So I got the well. I mean, it's just fucking shitty lettuce, tomato, and cheese from Taco Bell.
Yeah, with a $7 shell, though, you really made up.
And and I brought it home, and I prepared the seafood as it is on the internet for the Taco Bell seafood salad, and it was fine. And I will say, I don't know if I ever had the taco salad from Taco Bell. Have you ever had it before?
With the taco shell,
not the Power Bowl, but with the taco shell.
Yeah, my time with Taco Bell dates back a long ways, and it was basically my cafeteria for 10 years of my life or whatever. So there's times where I thought, maybe I should lose a few pounds, and the way I'm going to lose a few pounds is to eat the 72,000 calorie salad that they present you with, And it would be the kind of thing where you're like, well, I'll just eat the guts. I'll eat the good part, and I'll just, maybe I'll just pick at the shell.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If you just pick at that shell, you're still packing in fried chips. So yeah, I had it. It's like back in the day, it wasn't that bad because they used to have other ingredients that are rest in peace since abandoned. But
well, if you don't just get lettuce and tomato, it's pretty hooked up. It has rice in it. It has a ton of shit in it.
Oh, but I don't remember that. That's cool.
Yeah. I was just getting at that. It's gross. The taco shell is gross. I love a good taco salad taco shell, and I can't resist them. But this, it's pretty nasty. I had no desire to eat it after I dumped all the nasty cheap seafood out of it. I was like, at least I can eat the shell. But no, it was gross. But anyway, getting to the beefer. Yeah. So, and then even after that, I was like, I don't want to make another one of these videos. And then I forgot I already committed to it because I already bought the hamburger rolls and they were otherwise going to go to waste. So I was like,
you said it out loud to our audience.
I already bought the hamburger rolls. So I did it. I made one, what I would think to be an accurate beefer, which was just the beef and the lettuce tomato on the hamburger bun like it is in the one picture. So there's allegedly this item has been on the Taco Bell menu for like 15, 20 years. And there's only one picture on the whole entire internet of what it looks like, which is kind of sketchy. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think the beefer might just be an urban legend or something. But then I was like, that was dumb. And then I did kind of beefed up, pun intended, one where I put my shitty Velveeta cheese that I bought for another project on it. And some onions and some pickles and stuff. And it was fucking good. I would buy that. But you topped it all. I think you started a new craze. So I'll let you continue.
Yeah, I I don't know why I've never done this before. I don't know what's held me back. I've been thinking about the beefer for years now, and I've been like, man, I wish they would bring back the beefer. I wrote a song about it, and it's going to be the theme song of this episode again. I'm resurrecting it, and I don't know what took me so long. So you know, there's nothing stopping you. There's nothing stopping anyone from doing this. It's maybe easier for some than others, but my Taco Bell happens to share an adjacent parking lot with a Burger King. So boom, I just went straight through the Burger King drive-thru. I ordered that 99-cent hamburger. They have no idea what you're talking about. Go to Burger King and order a hamburger. Ask them for a hamburger. You will pull the needle off the record in that. Everybody will look up at you like, what did you just order? So I ordered a hamburger, and she was like, okay, $1.07. Like, pull up, I guess. And she handed me a burger, and I just stuck it in my pocket, and I walked into the Taco Bell, ordered a couple of soft tacos, I threw out the burger itself. I left the pickle on there, and that's key. I'm telling I don't know if you did this. The pickle and the beefer. Long story short, it's delicious. It's like really, you're surprised, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Like,
I agree.
Who cares? Taco on a bun, that's a sloppy Joe, big deal. Yeah, true. It turns out it's way better than you probably think it is. If you leave the pickle on it, it's delicious. I'm going to do this more. This is permanent. I'm going back forever, and I'm going to just live in the moment of eating a beaver for the rest of my life. Yeah, my friend, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, if you are a person who's either ballsy enough to request like a pound of just Taco Bell beef at Taco Bell, or you have access to that, you should definitely just be making these for your family, I would think.
Yeah, beefer night. fuck Taco Tuesday. So my friend, Tom from, Portland, he commented something like, you're thinking inside the bun and that unlocked the whole thing. That's why it's gone. Taco Bell banked a whole decade on the slogan, think outside the bun. And, it also happened to coincide with them getting rid of like olives, peppers, chili, like getting rid of all these ingredients. And like, we can get rid of the bun.
Yeah.
They'll never bring back the beefer because that's like. Their fortune right now is riding on the fact that they told people that they don't, that they said the burger wars were going on. And they said, don't go to those assholes. Don't go to those assholes. Come here. We have tacos. When has that slogan, when has that offer ever failed? Come on over. We have tacos is 100% success rate offer. So, it's never coming back formally, but you can do this. I did it. I walked right in there with a burger in my pocket.
Yeah.
I sat down at that booth. Try and find a booth where no one's looking. I beg you, don't let people see you do this. It's not going to go well, but it's delicious, and you're going to enjoy it.
See, I'm thinking that's the real challenge, not just making a beefer. I think the real challenge is now mixing Taco Bell beef with other fast foods, and I'm gonna see what I can do because I live for the first time in my life. A fast food chain that I thought was fake up until about 2 years ago.
Shoney's.
No, not Shoney's. Real? No, Shoney's is real. I went to one of those.
Okay.
It's that place is real bleak, but no. What's that place? Panda? Is it Panda Express? Is that what it's called? Yeah, I live near one of those. So, and that's right near the Taco Bell. So maybe I'll put that inside some lo mein noodles and see how Taco Bell beef lo mein is.
I would say for the heart of the challenge, it should make sense. That makes sense. You can't just be like, I'm dumping a taco on an ice cream cone or something like that. No. Do a good job.
Yeah.
Find places where taco beef and lettuce and the mess could be like a reasonable analog of what is already existing inside of this thing and do it. Make a, a gyro or a gyro, however you want to pronounce it, go for it. Like, find ways. Bigger the better. Like, if you're bringing in something that can't be hidden, like a whole Panera salad or something like that, like in a big container, film it and get it to me. Like, I want to know. I want to know what you're up to. I have a new segment. A couple weeks ago, or last episode, I mentioned how, you know, Al from Virtual Pros was eating the still beating heart of a dangerous fish. That was intriguing. And, you know, prior to that, I had mentioned to you that it never dawned on me in all the episodes that I listened to that when he's calling himself Henny Omega and going to HennyCon and all these things, he's talking about Hennessy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was like, this was coming up in some other conversation. I was like, wait, people drink Hennessy? That's like how you party, you drinking Hennessy? And, you know, it kind of just like feels like, yeah, cognac, whatever. But I've never had cognac. And I always thought it was like drinking maple syrup. So I can't imagine partying like hardball, just chugging maple syrup. Are you a cognac drinker?
When I was little, I thought it was like drinking maple syrup. But as I got older and I was an old enough boy to try cognac, it's gross. It's not good. It's not a taste I like. I don't even know how to explain it. It's kind of like, it's sweet, but like medicine-y. Not like Robitussin, but I don't know. Like kind of like if you maybe threw a little ash into Robitussin. Like, I don't know. It has like a kind of, a taste I have like an aversion to. Although I do enjoy Hennessy coladas, pina coladas made with Hennessy. I do enjoy those.
That's what makes sense to me, is I thought Hennessy was something that you use to make like mudslides or something like that. You know?
It's not. I think you're supposed to drink it straight, but yeah, it's not something I like drinking straight for sure.
Well, you don't have to describe the flavor to me, Mike, because I'm about to have my first cognac on the, and this is what we're going to do is every week, I'm, you know, in my effort to party like Al, who I've never interact with directly, but occasionally design t-shirts for, I want to know what this is about. So until I can no longer afford it, every classique episode of Border Boss, I'm going to try a different cognac. So we're going to go for it here. I got a little Hennessy. I bought my, you know, it's tough because you can't find nips of this.
No, you can't.
You got to buy pints and above. So I have a whole pint of Hennessy here, and boy, luckily the boy at the liquor store, there's a very handsome boy who works at my liquor store, and he told me that you can cook with this. So if all else fails.
Wait, you said it's real Hennessy though, right?
Yeah, I bought Hennessy VS, and I know there's like VS and VSOP.
Very special, I'd also just before you, I'd like to stop you and just point out for the non-Northeast regional people that listen to the show, Scott isn't being a racist for like the seventh episode in a row. Nip is a term that's it's a northeastern regional term for a tiny airplane bottle of liquor.
Oh yeah, what do they call it elsewhere? They would call it, like I used to call them ponies, and I think I'm the only person who's ever called them that, and I got it from Mad Magazine.
I actually coincidentally I didn't technically find out from Al, but yeah, I mostly found out from Al that a nip wasn't like a worldwide term, and that's like pretty tri-state area. Basically.
Well, apologies to any listeners who are put out by that use of the term. I'll refrain from it in the future. But this is it. I'm going to try my first Hennessy, my Hennessy VS. And, you know, maybe when I really run out of ideas, I'll just try the VSXX Extreme and whatever else the other ones are. But I have at least this, and I have a Courvoisier nip or tiny bottle, airport bottle. So we've got two episodes in the bag, and then after that I might have to go into my pocket. And the guy at the liquor store said the one that looks like it's like some sort of Holy Roman Emperor relic is the good stuff. So
it is.
So as soon as I gather up $78 or whatever it costs to buy that thing, I want it for the bottle anyway. It's beautiful. So here we go. Ooh, that is. That stings more than I thought. Like, yeah, I drink some hard stuff once in a while, and I'm not a huge, I'm not a lightweight, but I'm not a heavyweight. I definitely like some booze. Brown booze is not really my thing. It just tastes like brown booze, though. This is fine. guess, it's like whiskey. You know, it's just kind of like, it's like a slightly sweeter whiskey. So, one down, 78,000 to go. And I'm now an expert at least Hennessy.
You're a cognac expert, yeah.
I'm a cognac. Oh, you know, I forgot about this. This is the other reason I'm intrigued by this is that, you know, when I found out he was actually talking about drinking Hennessy, I remember that, you know, in the movie ATL, I think, Big Boy from Outkast, I think that's the movie where he's like the lead gangster.
Yeah.
And he rolls up and he's trying to impress a boy from his Escalade, and he's like, I'm drinking cognac. Want some? And he's sipping cognac out of a solo cup. So that's what I'm doing. I got a red solo cup because I'm going party style. So ever since then, I've been like, why would that be happening? Why would you be driving your big car and drinking cognac? And now I know. It's the goods. And from here on, I'm going to drink a Miller High Life. So now I'm slamming some liquor. So it's a race to the bottom.
You should switch it up with, what's that? You should just switch it up with Amaretto. I don't think.
Oh, I love Amaretto.
Yeah, cognac's not like Amaretto, but it's kind of like the same thing to me where I just don't understand how that can be your drink of choice, but, you know, whatever.
I could picture this mixing. Like, I could picture you pour a little Amaretto in this, and that would be actually a pretty nice, you know, hard night if you wanted to have a dark.
There you go. You're right.
Dark Night of the Soul. These would mix well. I like, our not listener and very estranged friend who was like a legendary Albany drunk punk before he joined the military. Used to drink Amaretto. He used to sit at the bar. He invited me to it. He's like, hey man, sit on down with me and have some Amaretto with me. I was like, hell yeah. And we sat down through a bad show that I didn't want to be at and just drank Amaretto all night.
Just like a couple old Italian men sipping on Amaretto.
Well, that's why another thing I thought this was something you drank after dinner if you were from another country. Like, you just sit down with all the other old men with huge eyebrows.
I mean, that's the thing. I think it's, you know, it was meant to be one of those drinks, like some kind of old man drink, but it got popularized through the rap music and it became like some other thing, basically.
Well, now that I'm in my 70s, I am trying to get more hip hop as much as possible. And it's just one more stone on my pathway to being very, very street. So there's a good amount of Taco Bell news this week. And one of the things that hit the scene, and everybody, my mom sent me a link to this. Everybody, my wife read this link to me out loud. She doesn't ever read links to me. She's just like, oh, everybody want to talk about the fact that Taco Bell is launching a vegetarian menu. And I read a couple of the articles and I don't get it. Did you actually read about this at all?
Yeah, it seems like they are. This is what the article says. They're dumping a lot of money into marketing of something that's
marketing
that's basically already a vegetarian menu, but I understand people are kind of dumb. I'm sure a lot of people that go to Taco Bell probably, you know, aren't brain surgeons probably, so they're like, we gotta and, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't go to Taco Bell because they think it gives you diarrhea and stuff like that. So I guess I can understand the marketing of, hey, we have vegetarian options, but it is weird. it's a weird thing because you would give everybody the benefit of the doubt that they should know that Mexican food is very easy to convert into vegetarian food, but I guess not a lot of people are that smart, I guess.
And even vegan, like, it's been a thing that, you know, like, one of the good things about Taco Bell is you can get it vegan. Like, I guess if you get the corn taco with beans, you know, some rice on it, whatever, It's effectively vegan food, although it's probably, I guarantee you, it's on the same slab of steel as chicken at some point in its trajectory. But I looked at the write-ups, and it doesn't seem like it's not like they're adding tofu or seitan or tempeh or even like peppers or anything to like beef it up. They're literally just showing you, hey, you know what you can order is beans. you know what we have? We have black beans. We have, pinto beans, and we have rice. Did you know that? And that those are not meat. Did you know those don't come from animals? And this made the news so hard. I haven't seen a link fire up like this from Taco Bell in quite some time, since probably the first free taco thing. In other news, this I don't understand. You had some experience with something like this. They're putting out a cheese dispensing billboard.
Yeah.
I have no concept of what that could look like. A billboard to me is something that's 80 feet in the air. So is it just like a tube, like an aquarium tube running down from a bag of cheese? Like, so you said that the Mountain Dew did this.
No, not Mountain Dew. It was, I don't know if it was an American. It might have been in England, but it was either Shock Top or another kind of like mid-level type beer or, you know, cider or some shit. And did a wall. Yeah, they did a wall like that. And it was like when I was doing social media management for like weird companies. And I remember like that was on one of the those trade websites that give you all like the marketing things. And I remember like watching the video being like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But, you know, it gets people talking, I guess. It's like, oh, man, I could go to that glory hole in the wall and get some alcohol. out of it. But I think in, you know, I think in reality it's probably like heavily guarded. My girlfriend was telling me she has to go to the airport often. She's saying there's some kind of like, it wasn't like a pizza machine, but there was some machine there that would give you like different foods from all over the world, basically. Like you would just go to it and it was like a hole or something, and like a dish would come out and it would just be like, you know, like elote or something like that, just like some kind of worldly small like appetizer thing. So I think that's a trend now, is putting weird shit in glory holes and getting people to talk about it.
Like over the last few years, there have been all these things that, you know, are like the most doomed business model, where someone really didn't think about the fact that you need to, like, you know, if you want anything to happen, it has to have volume, like crazy volume, like to make money. And there was that thing about the pizza ATM, which was some kind of gimmick. And I don't know what the deal was with that, but I know that behind the ATM was a staff of human beings.
The
thing was, the thing was basically an interface for a guy to make you a pizza. So it was just, they just eliminated like a clerk, but it wasn't like you could just set this machine up in like a dorm and sell, you know, the equivalent, like probably 8 pizzas that you could fit in the machine. You had to have a, like, this machine is the front of a kitchen. It's like, it's like an antlion or something like that, where the jaws are out of the dirt and there's a 30-foot animal underneath or something like that. And that's like, that's just seems like a doomed proposition. It seems like a gimmick, and it seems like a doomed thing to me, like the guacamole machine that was out for a little while. So I'm curious if any of these take off, if they're just strictly made to be like that month's social media thing, you know, and it's
pretty much,
they know it's going to just wither and die and vanish.
Cause like an unguarded thing that just dispensed nacho cheese would be so gross after about 10 minutes.
Well, you can find it out if you go to a Golden Corral. I think that they actually have that. The funny thing is that this cheese dispensing billboard, from what I read, it was out there promoting the Naked Chicken Chalupa, nacho Naked Chicken Chalupa. You know, the reason the Naked Chicken Chalupa is back is so they can get rid of the Naked Chicken Chalupa. They basically just opened the freezer and said, shit, you know, we have so many of these chicken folds left. They sent him out to everybody to get rid of, clear him out. So it was only out for a couple of days and it's already gone. So this billboard is, you know, it's just a place to get cheese now, I guess.
That's how, that's why those Burger King nuggets are already always like 10 for a dollar every few months, is just to like get rid of them.
Unrelated, speaking of machines, I sent you a picture. I just went to the most high tech soda place that I've been to in a while, and it was just a Cumberland Farms. I don't know if Cumberland Farms is very regional or kind of large, but it's
actually don't know either.
You know, it's yet another 7-Eleven analog, and we're getting 7-Eleven here, by the way, so I can't wait to have a Slurpee the size of my arm. But the Cumberland Farms has this machine called
1939.
It's called the 1939 soda machine, and it just dispenses old-timey sodas, like, you know, Lime Ricky and Shirley Temple and, you know, Vanilla Cream and stuff like that. And, you know, I tried a bunch of them. They're all cane sugar. They're pretty good. That's fine. Right next to it is the most modern soda machine I've ever seen. It's a touch screen. You swipe it to choose. You know, you like swipe through all the different sodas, and it like has almost like the old iPhone album art that actually flowed, you know, like that. Yeah. And then when you find the soda you like, you long press on it and it dispenses the soda. And it works perfectly.
That's just,
you
know, like a freestyle machine,
though. No, you tried those freestyle machines are garbage. You touch and touch and touch and nothing happens. And then when you finally get something to show up that's close to what you want, you hit that silver button and then the thing goes away. It's made to make you feel like you're 72 and like you're using a computer for the first time. This thing worked better than the computer that I use for my job to earn money. This is like the most state-of-the-art machine I've ever seen. And I found exactly what I wanted. I long pressed on it. I was like, oh my God, it's flowing perfect soda into this. This is great. And, you know, most of the screen was dedicated to advertising. So it's kind of, you know, a waste of space. The actual interface was just this tiny little section. But wow, I've never seen anything like it. So if you live within 10 minutes of me, upstate New York, give me a call. We'll go check out this Cumberland Farm soda machine, man. It's a bargain for what you get. Some new nachos are on the way, and the only reason I bring this up is what's your experience with nachos at Taco Bell?
You know, I get them here and there. I never really fall for the promotional ones, but you know, if I'm hunkering for nachos when they have them, I'll get them. But But, you know, I know Taco Bell nachos maybe aren't better than regular nachos, so it's kind of like a once in a while thing.
To me, it's like if you don't get the actual, like, Bel Grande, like the thing that's a tray.
Yeah.
And you don't get the right person, you just get garbage. Like, it's the number one vector for poor craftsmanship at Taco Bell. It is, if they're going to screw something up, it's nachos. They rarely do a good job. Even when it's the A team, you know, they just, I'm always, so I order the dollar nachos. You know, I don't expect much for a dollar, but I expect, no. You know, some kind of, you know, a nacho. A nacho should be chips with stuff on it. If you're getting chips and there's no stuff on it, you're not really getting nachos. You know what I mean? So this was like a whole bowl of chips. And then there was like one little, like a, not even like a scoop, like a teaspoon of beans. Like someone had stuck their two fingers in and pulled out like a little wad of beans and just slapped it on top and just like squeezed a little bit of cheese out on it. And it was miserable. Like I got it and I felt terrible. I just, my whole world just caved in. I was like, you know, even for a dollar, you could have done me better than this. And it kind of always feels that way. And, you know, one of the, you know, the famous viral videos was of a woman being very angry about her steak nachos and being made fun of by, you know, the surrounding people. But she has a point. When they screw up your nachos, it's the worst thing in the world. You know, you get it because their chips aren't very good. They're like fingernail consistency. They're weird. they're totally inconsistent. They taste kind of funny. They have almost like a soapy flavor to them or something like that. So if they don't give you, you know, as long as there's beef and beans and cheese on those chips, they're fine. But once you taste one by itself, you realize where the money went.
Yeah.
And it's not towards this thing. So they're putting out, I don't know what it is, but they're doubling down on all these nachos. There's like the chicken ones that are coming out, the barbecue chicken. They had a couple of value ones coming out. They have, and they have this new jalapeno nachos. And this is totally just, look what else we can do with the same shit. Because it's literally just a giant square, like the steak nachos. If you saw the pictures of the steak nachos that everyone was circulating, they were comedically large. And this is the same thing, but they put jalapenos on. Jalapenos are free. Jalapenos have never not been free. So they're doing you the favor of like putting that on, you know, like you could do with the app or whatever. And it's one of those things where it's like $1.50 with a soda. So you can't not buy it. Yeah. You walk in and you're obligated to buy this thing. And I'm probably going to fall for it, but I really only brought it because I've never had a very good nacho experience. It's always kind of a mess. And it's always the thing that casual Taco Bell people want. People who don't go very often are like, oh, you know, I only go there and I get like the nacho supreme. Like, man, you are fucking up. If the only time you go to Taco Bell, you get a nacho supreme, you are fucking up because you are buying the most miserable thing probably on the menu.
I always just fall for it still because if I'm really honest with myself and I just had to pick one food to eat for the rest of my life, like not the same exact food, like the same dish every day, but like one food that I could have variations of, it would probably be nachos. So
good nachos. Yeah. Good nachos all day. When I was younger, the best nachos were at the Ground Round. Of all the Mexican places and the Tex-Mex places and the, you know, the sports bars and places you think would be pretty good.
Yeah.
They're okay. But the Ground Round gave you a scoop of something on it that I don't know what it was, but it was delicious. It was almost like, you know, it was like the equivalent of getting really good ice cream, except it was something on nachos that I can't name.
Yeah, I mean, it's been at least 10 years since they've had them on the menu, but I still swear by those Smoky Bones barbecue chicken nachos. That's one of my favorite chain restaurant dishes of all time.
Smoky Bones is a sleeper hit. You can only get a couple things there, but those couple things are cream of the crop, A number one. We have both tried the goods of this place. You know, back when Kissing Contest was a going concern, every time I came down to special guest on an episode, we would go to Action Burger.
Yep.
And Action Burger, for people who didn't get here through Kissing Contest or Podcast Town or, you know, have any connection to that, is a place in Williamsburg that is literally a hole in the wall that is phenomenal. It is very strange and very odd, and it has it's storied, it's deep. There's plenty to know about it. You will not be disappointed if you open up a browser tab and start looking up Action Burger or just, you know, DM one of us about it because we'll tell you about it all day long. I've been there a few times. You've been there 100,000 times.
Yes.
But in the time since you left New York City and since I abandoned the idea of going to New York City, the place has gotten really strange.
Mm-hmm.
So
true.
we watched the, you posted a video today of the, of an inter- so, you know, let me give more background for people who don't really, like, I've lost part of our audience. This is a comic book themed burger joint.
Yes.
But as envisioned by a maniac.
Very much so.
A low-key maniac. I don't think he's a danger to people, but he's just kind of like, he's on his own trip. You know, when he opened it up, he also launched, I don't know if it was at the same time or it was just like concurrent, whatever. He launched his own sci-fi comic book called BioSapien to be part of the brand. Yeah. And he named all of his burger.
Basically the story is that he originally opened this with somebody else, but that the other guy's kind of like phased out of the story and like he's never mentioned anymore. But yeah, basically when they opened it, they wanted to open a comic book themed restaurant, but they didn't take into consideration that you can't just like name your hamburger like the Superman burger,
right?
Because DC will come and sue you. So to alleviate that, this guy made up a comic to take his comic book characters and you know, name his food after it. You know, in a perfect world, like if you know, I don't know, like a Todd McFarlane or somebody did that, it might work. But it's just some guy who has no other previous comic book skills. It's probably going to make for like a weird experience.
Yeah, it is very weird. And he sold the book there. And it's, you know, it's all like 3D rendered. Like he bought Poser 2 from Circuit City 15 years ago. And it's still on the same gateway computer that he's had since since his mom got it for him. And, you know, he's a very normal looking guy. Like he's just kind of like a strapping African-American guy or whatever. And he just seems totally normal. But he makes this completely crazy comic book. Which has the weirdest storyline, and there's artwork for it all over the place that was printed on an inkjet printer 12 years ago. And it's like a lot of it is like, you know, if you ever find yourself by accident, of course, on a DeviantArt site where it's furries and they have diagrams where there's, you know, things pointing at the utilities on their belt and that the fact that they have two tails because it helps them fly. And like, you know, when you see those diagrams where they've really thought about their character, he does that. He does that for everything, and he puts it in the bathroom, and he puts it on the wall, and it's like it's the placemats on the counter, and you know he has at one time he had thousands of burgers and sandwiches and items on his menu, and they were all named after his crazy characters, and there was like a dark side and a light side to him. Like the dark side was the unhealthy stuff, the light side was the healthy stuff, but the healthy stuff was just like tuna. tuna on bread, or it's weird. It you know, it has to be experienced to be believed. But you know, in the intervening years, it's kind of degraded a little bit and become more of a video game thing. Like he just started. And the place is like a kid's room. It's like he just put his toys up, he put his video games up, and he just every time he got something new, he's like a guy who owns a junk store where he just sticks new things in. So there's, you know, there's video games and toys and junk everywhere. And you could play free video games there. I think there's like Nintendo's and there's Xboxes and stuff, and you can just go there and play them. That's pretty neat. But yeah, it's bizarre and it's inconsistent and it seems innocent. Maybe you have a different take on this. I feel like it's kind of innocent. I don't think it's craven. I think he really wanted to do this. I think that this was a genuine idea. I think that when he is up against the wall, it's the customer's problem. Like when he finds that he can't fulfill something, it seems like he's a nice guy, but when he finds that something has gone wrong, he like turns on you. and it can be really bad. As a side note, the Kissing Contest co-host Doan had an award-winning burger named after him that I couldn't buy when I went there. I went all the way down to Brooklyn to get one of these things. It was called the Waffle Knot.
Yeah.
He named it, and they wouldn't make it for me. Even though they had the waffles, they had the burger, and they had all the items for it. That burger was insane, by the way.
The Waffle Knot was basically, like, I would say the tipping point of action burger menu items. Scott didn't mention, I have been there hundreds of times, but I was probably at one time, like, the world's foremost leading expert in, like, action burger knowledge. But, yeah, I think that was, like... That burger had like the most toppings, and I think after that they're like, okay, we need to settle it down a little, and it's been getting, as far as I know, it's been getting a little more manageable there as far as the menu goes.
So where it falls apart for me is that in the years since I've been there, you know, first of all, the place is literally a hole in the wall. It's very small.
Yeah, it's basically like a Chinese takeout
yeah,
kind of spa, or you know, maybe a little larger than that.
Yeah.
Or you know, just like a pizza takeout spot. It's not a place like just the layout of the place. You wouldn't go in there and say, "Hey, I want to sit down and have a meal here," unless you know I'm waiting for a bus or something. It's not like a place you go. It just from the layout, it's not a place you would say, "Hey, I want to go there and sit down and eat."
And it seems like it would be hard to clean, which is terrible for a restaurant.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's happened in the time since then, which I don't have a clear concept of, I've seen some social media posts. I sort of understand. Oh, one of the things that we didn't talk about, I'll wrap it into this, is that he has like a shelf of liquor. And you can get crazy drinks from him, and they're kind of affordable. He'll give you like a giant, like a large Pizza Hut soda glass full of like a milkshake with a whole bottle of like $7 vodka poured into it or something like that. And he has this really frat boy shelf of liquors that you can choose from to make these crazy drinks. But he's expanded that concept into some sort of science fiction bar. And I think that the idea for the science fiction bar was propelled by the fact that he found LED stools.
Yeah. He found LED track lighting and figured out he could like do cool stuff with it, basically.
So he has these like Lucite LED stools that light up crazy colors. And he's like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a Star Trek bar adjacent to my burger. And I'm going to have like a nightlife version of Action Burger, but I don't get it. There's no room for anything in this place. Yeah. There's not even any room for them to make your food or take your order. It's the most cramped thing in the world. Where is the bar? What is the, do you know what's going on?
Yeah. So I've honestly only went there once since the remodel, because basically to back up a little, there was a point where Vlaine, the owner, was just trying to do all the stupid shit to get some publicity. Like he was on that Mystery Diner show on the Food Network.
Oh, right.
He was like, I remember he like auditioned for Shark Tank. Like he was like really trying to get out there. And
what did he pitch on Shark Tank? A burger?
I think he just tried to pitch like franchising of his. Oh, okay. And you know, obviously that's not what Shark Tank talks. I guess a good way to explain the owner of Action Burger, he's like kind of one of those guys who doesn't see that his stuff is lower quality than other stuff. Like he's one of those people who will make a hamburger at home with like Wonder Bread and, you know, French's mustard and say, yeah, this is just as good as a Big Mac. Like it's just, you know, it's like one of those types of guys who can't see there's a huge difference between his restaurant and a real one, basically.
Yep.
But yeah, so at, you know, he did the Mystery Diners thing and then like, there was a message on the internet where they said they were going to be closing down for remodeling and they're going to be opening a sci-fi bar. And I was like, that's the end of Action Burger. I'm glad I got to see it. And they were closed for an abnormally long time, like at least 8 months. And they reopened with like a new remodel. And yeah, they kind of, I don't know, I guess like that building just had like a whole other back area that they weren't using. And they just like knocked down a wall. And so like now they have like a whole... They have like a whole back area, but it's way more awkward than it used to be, but it's not in the charming way. Like you go there when you used to go there and it was awkward. It was like awkward and like, ha, you know, look at us doing this stupid thing.
Right.
And now it's just kind of like, I don't want to be here. It's they painted all of the walls white, just like stark white. I would say it was like eggshell white. And that is not a good look for a restaurant of any sort, but especially one that's basically inside of a takeout pizza place. And then it's just, you know, the wall he knocked down, there's a bar and it does have like the LED track lighting and stuff like that. And a couple of like those all-in-one arcade games or arcade machines that have like an emulator in it that just has like 49 million games on it.
He's very proud of that. That's the crux of his interview video that we saw recently.
Which is like something I think you could buy for like $1,200 or something on the internet.
You can make it yourself. That,
yeah, you can make it yourself. They give you the kit for like $1,200. But yeah, basically, like Scott pointed out, the frat boy liquor shell just transferred over to that bar area, and it's not like a real bar. It's like he serves shots in like little tiny kind of like medicine cups, so they're basically what would equate to a half shot in real life, and it's not.
But often free, like they'll just be trays them out for free once in a while.
You can pretty much get the place going. Yeah, and it's like he didn't hire bartenders, so. It's just whoever's working is going to make you a mixed drink. And, you know, I don't want some fucking teen that signed up to be a cashier at a burger place making me a mixed drink. So it's just kind of like an awkward spot. It sucks. It sucks that it kind of went from charming awkward to just I don't want to be here. But, you know, As Scott said, they're in, it's in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It's a place that the rent was like expensive when I moved there 10 years. Well, not in Williamsburg, but in Brooklyn when 10 years ago, Williamsburg was expensive. And now it's like not expensive in a hip, cool, I'm a teen in my mom's rich way. It's like expensive, like yuppie expensive way. Like, you know, there's people like jogging and stuff like that. Just, you know, like real, you know, like jogging with like sweaters around their necks and just, you know, like real rich older people live there now. And he's not like in the heart of Williamsburg, but it's still in that area where it's just like, how the fuck is this place still in business?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the remodel has been at least a year now. And
it's still going.
Yeah. Since the remodel, they've been open for a year now. And, you know, I was like, this is curtains for this place. So I don't know how he does it, but he does keep the lights on.
Well, you know, that kind of sums it up, but I just want to list some other things. You know, I'm just going to like scatter list some things. So first of all, he occasionally hires, you know, young people to cosplay. Like they get paid to wear like a silver jumpsuit and be one of his Bio Sapien characters, like, you know, attractive young girls or whatever. He hires them just to,
I would just say young girls.
Young girls have to walk around. And meanwhile, his wait staff is often the grumpiest people that I've ever encountered. And then the greatest thing is that he has an eating contest, an old 96er kind of thing, where if you eat this whole meal, you get one of a few different awards or whatever.
And you get the award.
The award that was on the wall was a Bio Sapien shirt that was white.
Yeah.
Triple extra large and dirty.
Yeah.
and printed with like your Epson laser jet, the heat transfer. Like he just makes them himself. So you have to eat. So, you know, I don't think that there's one of those deals where if you eat the whole thing, you get it for free.
No,
so
you gotta buy it.
Yeah. So it's an expensive meal. It's difficult to eat. It's impossible to win. You know, some people have won it, but you know, at what cost? And then when you win, you get like a shirt that you literally wouldn't wipe the sweat off your face with this thing. You would probably don't even want to touch it. You would have them put it in a Ziploc. That's pretty amazing. But on the upside, every time I went there, I loved it. Like I loved the food that I had. It's a fun place. If you're in town, I mean, I don't know what it's like now. I don't know if it's degraded or whatever.
I think it's a little less fun, but I think if you haven't been there, it's a fun time. I do have one more thing to add when you're done though.
The food is grievous but delicious. I've never had anything that I thought was gross there. Like the combinations are ridiculous. His drinks are ridiculous. His ideas are preposterous, but it's like, if you're an open soul and you accept the format of Guy Fieri's world, like if you accept that worldview of like, you know, gross foods piled upon gross foods, it was great. Like I had like chili burgers I thought were great. I had chili fries. They're delicious. Everything there is cooked okay. You're not going to get tomaine poisoning. You're not going to get.
I don't agree with this at all. Okay. Everybody knows. I don't
dig in.
No. I the food is horrible. It's real bad. I mean, it's not bad if you made it at home or something, but it's really overpriced. And it's basically,
that's true.
If you went to wherever, like whatever Sam's Club, that's what it's called. Like if you went to Sam's Club and just bought like bulk meat, it's like that kind of, and it's like either over-seasoned or under-seasoned. He cooks everything by default well done, which is not a thing anybody on earth does. It's just like, it's a mess. The food.
Maybe it's because I always get things with chili on them, and I love chili. Yeah. I don't think I've ever gotten anything without chili on it.
But it's still like the food still has strange nuances though. Like you would figure a guy who's just buying bulk meat at Sam's Club or wherever the bulk place is, and is just probably using just shitty hamburger patties or just like low grade beef. If you buy the chicken fingers, they're actually like, you know, hand breaded, which is like, what? Chicken fingers is like the easiest thing to buy pre-made.
Right, that's supposed to get you off the hook.
everybody buys like pre-made chicken fingers, but not Action Burger. They actually hand bread this like low grade chicken meat. And I find that pretty charming. So usually if I do go there, I just get the chicken fingers.
That's incredible.
The thing I had to add though is another recent addition to the Action Burger lore since the remodel is that I now the only way I can keep in touch is through Yelp. I can't go there anymore, and he rarely posts as much as he used to on Instagram and stuff like that, or YouTube. Mm-hmm. But Action Burger does have its legitimate fans, like people who do like their food like Scott, but there are a lot of people like me who think the food is gross and they don't understand the charm of it. So they do get their fair share of horrible reviews. It usually seems to be for delivery. Like it'll be like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Like my food took 3.5 hours and it came, there was only like half of a bun inside of it and the rest was in the bag. Like it's just like ridiculous shit where you're just like, oh wow, I've never heard of a restaurant doing this. And Vlaine and his wife or girlfriend used to answer these things.
It's incredible.
And then something like, you know, if you go on Yelp, like the manager's allowed to respond. Then something happened where I should have had it pulled up because so I knew the name, but Vlaine like pretended that he doesn't ride them anymore and he changed like his avatar and his name. And I think I'm pretty sure it's an Indian man. It's like a white man or an Indian man just in like a business suit. And he's pretending to be like the new owner of Action Burger, but it's not, you know, it's just Vlaine. Like it's like, you can tell just by his wording and his cadence and everything that it's just him. And it's just like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing. So that's like a new cool ripple to Action Burger.
Oh, the one that I saw was incredible. It was something like, the people were like, yeah, I mean, I ordered like chicken fingers and they brought me like a burnt tray of like mac and cheese.
Yeah, it was something else. Yeah, they gave them something else.
And he was like, hey, what are you complaining about? We didn't have the chicken fingers, so we sent you mac and cheese. That's like an equivalent value.
Yeah, that's you can't do that.
No, and it was still burnt. Like whatever they sent was still screwed up. So he defended, like I think he defended it in character. And
I'm looking at their website real quick. I just want to see what his fake name is now.
This is worth it. Like if you're bored and you are, you know, reasonable at the internet to go dig through all this stuff, even just finding the PDF of their menu is worth your time.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think they have the menu on the internet anymore. They might have it, but I used to try and save them, and I don't know if they made the move with me. I hope I have at least have a little. I looked on it. He changed his name to Jack C, and it's just like it's like a fat white, or I wouldn't say fat, but it's like just like an old white man in a business suit. And Vlaine is not old or white or a person who wears business suits, so it's a really good disguise. No one will ever figure it out though.
Good news is that I forgot that I have BioSapien number one in PDF. So get at me. I'm going to give it to you.
The listener Pierce send that to you? Because I think he sent us one.
I don't think I don't remember who sent it. I mean, I probably got it from you then indirectly. But anybody who needs it, if I can enrich your appreciation of Action Burger, I'm going to give you BioSapien number one at $0 and 0 cents. So to pivot from a dubious business model to a wildly successful business model. Right now, Netflix is doing something that I don't know what spurred them toward this, but they're basically just putting HGTV and like, you know, TLC style programming on in bulk, and they're doing really well with it. And they're doing they're sort of reimagining it as subcultures, you know, like what if, for instance, Storage Wars was, you know, aimed toward, you know, hip hop kids or something like that. But, you know, so first of all, everybody in the world is making jokes on Twitter about Marie Kondo and tidying up. I never would have pictured that in my wildest dreams. I was familiar with her, you know, concepts on doing laundry and throwing out your trash for a long time. I'm acquainted with people who swear by her books and by her, you know, her laundry methods or whatever. Of course she gets a TV show eventually and she's like an adorable person with, you know, interesting ideas or whatever, but people are out there making jokes about her and about her laundry, about folding laundry, about like uncluttering your house. That's what Netflix did. They made a show about like tidying up your house into hot commodity. And you know, for me and Mike, a specific character who sparks joy within us is Slobby Robbie. One of these things that they I don't know how they stumbled on this guy. It's kind of an amazing show. It hits all the beats for me. It hits all the beats for you. I know that this is just like they couldn't have found something more attuned to us if it would like actually deliver a Micronaut to my house or something like that. So Slobby, it's called Slobby's World. Dig it up. Yeah. How did you find this? Like, do you police Netflix for ideas, or did this come up somehow?
No, actually, Brian, aka Thrift Store Jobber, who is a man who does what Slobby does for a living. He was like, "Hey, did you hear Slobby's World?" And I was like, "No." And I looked it up, and I was like, "Oh, this sounds great." And I didn't like it at first. So
yeah,
I'll say that I think what the appeal is to these shows on Netflix right now is. I used to be like pretty much an expert on reality television, and then like reality television got really bad and I stopped watching it and went back to watching wrestling. But it quenched it scratched my itch for like wrestling entertainment for many years when reality shows were really good.
Yeah.
And I think what's like so capturing about these reality shows on Netflix right now is because they're so unlike what we're trained to see in reality shows. It's not like Slobby's World is calling his buddy up every 10 seconds to check a price or something. They're not doing like clickbait, like leave you hanging for a commercial break bullshit.
Yeah,
it's
they can't.
It's just like this. Yeah, it's just like this guy being a character, which is fine. You know, it's probably polarizing, but it's, you know, it's they're not taking breaks for dumb shit. They're not adding drama. They're not having Slobby like go on a boat and do cruising and like talk to his family and stuff like that. It's like I have no idea what the fuck Slobby does outside of work. And that's not a thing that's usually in American reality television anymore. There's always some kind of backstory they're trying to shoehorn in to make these characters, I don't know, like marketable or something. But Netflix doesn't need to do that because they put out thousands of shows a week. If Slobby's World doesn't hit, it doesn't matter to them. So it's real, and that's the same thing with Marie Kondo. The Marie Kondo show is kind of like almost stressful to watch as a person who's watched like thousands of hours of reality television, because every minute you're watching it, you're expecting like that other foot to drop and somebody like start panicking and they can't throw out their stuff and they're like screaming and yelling and throwing shit and then like Marie Kondo's like yelling at them and there's like dramatic music, but that never happens. She just like comes to the house and fixes everything. that's just the show. There's no like conflict or nothing you expect, and I think people just aren't used to seeing that. So seeing it now is just like, it's like being able to breathe for the first time, basically, and it's fucking great.
So Slobby Robbie, if you haven't seen it, is I believe he's a Canadian based.
I don't think he's Canadian.
You don't think so?
No.
He's got a really idiosyncratic accent, and to me, it sounds like a Montreal guy because it sounds like someone who. It just sounds like someone who comes from elsewhere, but maybe I just don't know about Arizona.
I guess we could split the difference then. He's based in Tucson. There's nothing saying he lived in Tucson his whole life, but I said he sounds like both members of ICP, Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J, combined into one person. And they're from Detroit, so that's like near Canada, so people in that area kind of have their own accent. So he might very well be from like that weird bordering area of America and Canada somewhere.
I'll buy it, but I'll submit to you that he is a nerd.
He's obviously a nerd. I don't think you can't not be a nerd and do this.
But you can't be a nerd and be from Detroit. You can be a nerd and be from Canada.
That's true.
So he is nerdy in a way that I feel is Canadian personally. I'm not going to dig in about that. You may be right. I may be right. His accent seems odd to me. It seems like it's odd, and he's got crazy hair. He's in his 40s, but he still acts like he's in his 20s. But he runs a shop. He runs two stores, but the one that the show is about is like an 80s and 90s pop culture junk shop in Arizona. And it basically exists to sell like the backwash of 1991 to college students at a markup that is pornographic. Like, it is otherworldly. Some of it could be for the show. Some of it could be for shock value. Some of it could just be for fun. But, you know, he sells things at prices that you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you like, who would come into your store and buy a t-shirt for $300 or whatever? Yeah. And like, I mean, you expect that on the internet for sure. Like, you go on eBay and you
definitely
find people selling,
you
find people selling vintage shirts. It's ridiculous.
And they're usually because they're near a credit card. So it's easy to buy something for $300 on the internet. But the way this show sets it up, it's like everybody is walking around with $2,000 specifically
cash
to buy old t-shirts at any given moment.
Cash, cash, cash. And not only that, like, it, you know, it goes beyond that. Like, this show really gets into some things I would never have imagined. But yeah, so he runs a store that sells 80s and 90s stuff. And when I say, you know, 80s, you're probably thinking Pac-Man. That's what I would have thought. It's not that at all. Like, it's like something, it's some version of the 80s and 90s that doesn't really overlap with my experience. And I think it's normal. I think it's because it's more hip hop and more like style conscious. And after, you know, a few episodes, you're like, wow, this guy really only sells six things. You know, he sells MCM, which I'd never heard of in my life until this. And he will go on at length about this MCM thing, which is kind of like a Gucci looking, Louis Vuitton looking print on a bag. He just sells bags, wallets, and belts that have this MCM print for extreme amounts of money. And he will like sit down and he'll grab somebody's hand and sit them down and say, let me explain to you the Cognac Visotos print of MCM and why it's important.
That's one thing I'm unclear on. I knew MCM from growing up. It was like it was like one of those 80s hip hop brands. Like that's what, you know, the big rappers would wear. But the way he talks about it, he makes it sound like this is a common thing in the vintage world where everybody still loves MCM. And I don't think that's true, but I don't know.
He sells stuff like that. He sells like Gucci t-shirts, and he sells not only Gucci t-shirts, but he openly sells bootlegs.
Yeah.
And a good percentage of this show, I'm going to say maybe more than half of the show, is spent with him talking about the bootleg items that he's selling. And sometimes not even just bootleg, sometimes literally like chintzy bullshit costume jewelry and you know, like toy accessories that he has repurposed. One of the hallmark moments of it is when I think it's Gucci, or maybe it's Chanel. It's Chanel. It's like a necklace that he made. Like he made it with Play-Doh. Like he like literally sat down with like tempera paint and a chain that he pulled out of a gumball machine and something else. And he made a Chanel chain. And then he paired it with a No Limit Soldier gumball machine chain that was bought from a thrift store. Like something you'd actually buy for about $7 in 2001, at like a dollar store. And he sold it to some kid for $200-$300.
Yeah.
It is like, it's not even metal. I don't even know what it's made of. It's made of like toothpaste or something like that. Yeah. And, that's what the whole show is, but he just does this stuff left and right. And he sells all these things that I'd never heard of prior, but they're hideous and ugly. And it's lovely. Like I love watching this show because I'm like, what universe does this come from that all these people are lining up to spend $12,000 on a polo sign or like hundreds and hundreds of dollars on those. I think they're called Fanimation shirts or jackets.
Yeah, the chalk line jackets.
But I never heard of those. Were you familiar with those before?
Oh yeah, those were huge. But they made a comeback recently.
They're pretty tasteless. Like I don't mind that. You know that's your lane. Go for it. But like they're not.
There was a Chicago Bears one that I wanted when I was a kid. And in the last episode, he goes to New York and he features a store, Mr. Throwback.
Yeah.
And they had it there. I think it was only like, it wasn't a Slobby's World price of $300 or whatever he was pricing those jackets. I think it was like 80 or 90 bucks. And I was like, I was so close to buying it. But I was just like, I'm fucking old. I can't wear this outside. But it was like just like from because I've wanted it since I was a kid. But yeah, so I was always a big fan of those jackets.
Mr. Throwback outlined something that I'm about to lose us a few listeners, but Mr. Throwback outlined something that I really noticed on this show, which is that basketball gear isn't for everybody.
No, it's not.
Mr. Throwback looks, I mean, I'm sorry if Mr. Throwback is a listener, you're a lovely person. You seem like a nice guy.
He's a nice guy.
But you don't, you know, like you don't really have the form to dress a certain way. And, you know, like when you put on that like really boxy square basketball jersey with the giant shorts, you look like this is anybody. If you're not actually a basketball player with sweet muscles and you're not 6'9", you look like an infant. You look like an infant wearing a onesie. And you know, this guy's going through like Slobby's Robbie's going through bin after bin of all these things, and he's like lifting them up like, oh my god, this is gonna look so dope. And he's like, I like wearing these things. He wears actual onesies. I don't know what that deal is. I don't know where he comes from. He wears literally like one piece little shorts jumpsuits that I think you're kidding. Are you serious? Like, you're kidding me? He wears that stuff for real. But one of the other exciting things about this show is that Sloppy Robbie is a man of girth.
Yeah.
And he's in Tucson, which is hot, and he sweats like a faucet pours nonstop. And he has crazy wild hair and like a crazy beard. And he is nonstop running his hands over his forehead and through his hair and then like touching the items. So someone will bring in, you know, like a pair of like Gucci sneakers or something like that, that they think they have that are worth, they think they're worth $1,200. And there's Sloppy Robbie like, oh man, check this out. Rubs in like wipes the sweat off, runs it through his greasy hair, and then picks up this $1,200 sneaker and starts handling it. And then reaches out his hand to shake the man's hand or whatever. Yeah, like yeah. That whole exchange is off limits for me. Like, I don't know what just happened here, but this is disgusting. Like, why don't they edit out the fact that this guy is constantly mopping sweat off of his face with his hand?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in this show that's definitely unfortunately true. Like those shirts going for a few hundred dollars and stuff like that. The Harley shirts are ridiculous. They go for so much money. So that all that stuff's true. But as Scott pointed out with the sweat, there's also several instances of the show where Sloppy Robbie tries to pawn off some dirty stained shirt as like a bonus. Like you're getting a bonus when you have some pit stains and like some dirt all over your shirt. And I don't think anybody who buys vintage t-shirts is really pumped on getting a shirt with mustard stains on it. So maybe that's why he's called Sloppy Robbie though. He sweats a lot and he likes stains.
So among other things, he sells, you know, homemade jewelry, but he also repeatedly, multiple episodes, talks about how you sell, and maybe this is normal. I think you actually found a link that backs him up on this, but you sell women's belts from the 70s as like Run DMC style bling.
Yeah.
You know, like they're big chains, but they're clearly not real gold. Like the gold part is flaking off. You're seeing like the gumball texture that's underneath this thing. And he's selling this thing for $80, $90, $120 a piece. And then he customizes shoes in store. And, like among many scenes of craftsmanship that take place in this show that are shocking, he makes a pair of Super Mario Brother 3 sneakers for, you know, a fan. Like, and they're the abyss. They're just the bottom of the line of anything I've ever seen in my life. And then he charges him a crisp $500 for the privilege.
That is even including the sneakers. That's just like for the paint job.
Right, he had to bring in
his own. I already own the sneakers.
He was wearing them and they made fun of him and said, you know what we should do with the sneakers we're making fun of right now is paint them like childish Crayola colors.
And then charge you for sneakers you already own.
Yeah.
That is the one that it has to be the fakest thing about the show is that any kind of custom made thing they do on the show is ridiculously, he quotes a ridiculous price. He gives Merce, who's a rapper, that was more well known about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's like, he goes to the guy who does the chalk line jackets. He goes to his house to, of course, sell him chalk line gear that apparently he couldn't find, even though he works for the company. But either way.
Yeah, he has a rack. He has a rack of chalk line already, and he goes there to sell him more.
Yeah, but he's like, oh yeah, Merce is my boy. I want to make him like this custom jersey. I got this blank original champion jersey, because back back in the 80s and 90s NBA jerseys were on champion, so he has like this blank LA Clippers jersey, and the guy just straight up designs a nice clean logo, but it's not something that I think would take Scott more than I don't know 10 minutes to do, and then he just straight up puts like a heat vinyl transfer right onto the thing. And I'm like, oh, that's a cool jersey, like it looks cool, I guess. And then he goes to give it to Merce and he's like, just give me 600. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like that is a ridiculous price to put like a vinyl transfer onto a jersey. But and then Merce is like, okay. So there, I don't know. I refuse to believe that was an honest transaction.
The salesmanship on this is actually kind of really interesting to me because it's so casual and so natural. So, you know, he'll bring something ridiculous down. He'll set it down and say, yeah, just hit me with like a cool 700 for that. and the guy will be like, I'm going to hit you with a crisp 650. Yeah. And he'd be like, you know what? Let's just cut it in the middle. We'll do a clean 670 out the door, cash.
All day.
And all day. All the phrases they use, they legitimately seem upbeat and exciting and casual. And you like, I could see where that would work. It's not going to work on me. I saw that a mile off, but I can see where you're like, oh, you know, like you're easing the customer into thinking, yeah, sure. this Wu-Tang shirt that was like from a lit, it's from a dollar store, is probably a $300 shirt. It's the whole
that's the one thing, because I am trying to give it the benefit of the doubt that it's not as fake as it can possibly be. And I am thinking, because so a lot of the prices I think are fair for internet prices for people who want to buy that stuff. I don't think you could charge that much for a store in Tucson, Arizona, which is not exactly known for having tons of wealthy people living there and, you know, just being like a hip place. But I can see his charm and his like charisma actually, because he is selling, he's literally selling like stained shirts, and he's like, "That looks dope on you, homie." And I'm just like, I could see, man, this guy has like a lot of charm and charisma for a guy who lives in not even the biggest city in Arizona. So, so maybe it works. Maybe he's such a good salesman that he can charge $200 for a shitty shirt.
Not necessarily enough charm and charisma that he could be 43 and grinding his groin on an 18-year-old girl that comes in to try on a t-shirt.
That's really weird. That's in the pilot. I think, you know, I think that was like after the pilot, they're like, okay, we don't need the sex stuff, because that's what turned me off. I was like, I'm not going to watch a whole series of this older man like hitting on teens that come in his store.
In a onesie.
Luckily, in a onesie. But luckily, yeah, I think after the pilot, they're like, okay, we don't need that aspect of the story anymore.
So this is something I want people to write me in about this. And maybe thrift store jobber is the guy, but you and I already kind of discussed this, so I'm pretty sold on this. So where I live is terrible for secondhand anything. You know, there's not a lot of good thrift stores. Craigslist is an abyss. Like if you try and sell anything or buy anything on Craigslist, it sucks. We don't have any such thing as swap meets. I think maybe bikers have swap meets, but you know, all these kind of storage warsy shows, it's just a fundamental part of what they do. Like, yeah, I can get that all day and sell it at the swap meet for twice what I paid for it. This dude is forever just going places and, you know, like moving aside a drape and finding like a Skeletor.
You know, that's not real.
Some rube who doesn't even know that their iPhone goes online somehow is putting like a boxed toy from the 80s out for $10 or... like a display item from a luxury brand for, you know, $30 or whatever. There's no goddamn way on earth that you still find those kind of like diamond in the rough deals.
They find a $1,200 jacket at the Goodwill.
Right.
Goodwill.
A Michael Jackson Thriller jacket. They find you haven't heard a Thriller? Like Gilbert?
They go through that stuff with like a fine tooth comb, just like looking for valuable shit now. So, I mean, obviously stuff still slips through that's like common, like t-shirts and stuff. But I think if they saw a Thriller jacket come into Goodwill, they'd be like, huh, this is probably worth a little more than $15.
So let me know if you actually, if you are just stumbling around all the thrift stores and swap meets.
I know, Brian, thrift store jobber. I can't remember what part of upstate New York it is, but there's that, you probably know what it is. There's that world's longest like yard sale thing. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that's never any good though. Like
he went there. He got these fucking baseball jerseys from like the 20s or the 30s and got them for like $10 or $20 and sold them for like $200 each.
A relative of mine is a career garage sailor, and that's what that place, Warrensburg, is the place that does like the world's biggest garage sale. And those people have been doing it for so long, the same as my relative, that you know, you've garage sailed enough that you're out of good stuff after a while. Like you're not putting out the Omega watch that you have no idea what it is that's been in your basement that your grandfather brought back from the war or something like that. That stuff's long gone, and you're really just putting out the homemade crafts and the garbage and like the toys from, you know, 15 years prior or whatever. So I would maybe like someone just came out of the woodwork and was like, you know, that garage sale they do every year, I'm going to go out.
Well, I mean, maybe he has good luck. I was with him one of those times when he got one of those Harley shirts for like 300, like that goes for like $300.
Lucky son of a bitch.
Yes, he has some luck.
So next week is a very special episode. It's so special because we don't have to do a lot of work for it, because we are bringing in guests. It's going to be an all holes filled episode of all guests all day. You already did your work because you're a go-getter. I haven't done a goddamn thing yet. My guests are lined up. We're going to have Shelby and Sarah from a reunion of the Illogical Contraption crew. And who are the people that you interviewed?
I interviewed Kevin from Junk Food Dinner. Junk Food Dinner, probably the longest running cult film review podcast at this point, because they've been around for 78 years. Jesus. And Also, J.B. Rowe, who is a, he does comic books. He's like a graphic designer. He does a lot of artsy type shit.
So all celebrities.
All celebrities.
And people are already hitting me up to be guests. So I don't know how we're going to handle that. Probably not. I'm probably just going to record them and then just, you know, put that in the stacks like the Ark of the Covenant in the Nazi brand. I got people feeling good.